Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Lake Life Weekend podcast. I'm Dirk, I'm your host as every week. We have been doing this for 4 months now, and I'm really happy to see growing followers and people that like us. That's thank you very much. That's great. I don't know if you follow us on Instagram or Facebook as well. We do capture some pictures here and there and share them. Feel free to post something or write something about your Lake Life Weekend experience. You can always email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com. Also with thoughts, critique, or if you would like to be part of our program. And coming to that, stay tuned today. We mentioned the Ridgewood Winery quite some times for their music events on Saturdays, and we were able to connect to Penny, who owns and operates and founded the winery 10 years ago almost. Next year is the 10th anniversary, and stay tuned for an interview to learn on how she came up with the idea and what it means to run and operate a winery in Minnesota. We would like to share some news here. Public beach in Virgus may be expanding. That's great news. The public beach in Virgus may be expanding from the swimming dock to the boat dock, which has been discussed in the last council meeting. And if you remember, we had a sandcastle contest at Looney Days here. We organized it, and it superseded our expectations. Last year was 3 participating teams. This year we had 7 participating teams, lots of kids, and it was fun. And with a bigger beach, we can host even more. So join us next year for the sandcastle contest during Looney Days. Trail in the works from Battle Lake to Ashby. Another nice news item. A trail is in the works to connect Battle Lake to Ashby, and planning is underway. If the plans are approved, the trail will take up to 20 years to complete. The main goal is to connect the Glendalough State Park Trail to the Central Lake State Trail, and has the potential of being a 17 to 20 mile long path. All news, the whole article at the Fergus Falls Journal. You will find a link on our website. I like that's a great addition. Another news item here, proposed late season deer hunt and regulations. You can also find the full article on the Fergus Falls Journal, a link on our website, lakelifeweekend.com. Public input is encouraged for proposed late season antlerless only deer hunt in southern eastern Minnesota. There will be 2 public meetings. The first meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, August 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Houston Elementary School Gymnasium. The second meeting is scheduled for Thursday, August 24th at the DNR Central Office in St. Paul. So if that is something you want to participate, raise your voice, please feel free. Now coming to some events before we hear our interview. Barnesville Potato Days are coming up. I was a foreign exchange student at Barnesville High School, and Barnesville is kind of like my emotional hometown here. So I enjoy Potato Days. It's coming up this weekend, 25th through 26th. Of August. It's full schedule and events of Potato Days can be found on potatodays.com. Also from a link from our website as always. Muscatel Ojibwe Forests Rally. I'm sorry I butchered that. August 25th, 7 a.m. through August 26th, 8:30. Full map and all that on their website. Please go to lakelifeweekend.com for a link. 12th annual Boats and Bars event on the 26th and 27th here in Detroit Lakes. Also with music and lots of fun. Lakes area, parrotheads.com. That's where you find all information. A link on our website as well. And then in Detroit Lakes, 3rd annual Ripfest, Lakeside Tavern, this August 26th. All day long with a contest beginning in the morning. And then I think you can eat throughout the afternoon. So that will be fun. Lots to do. Find it all on our event schedule on lakelifeweekend.com. And now, please enjoy our interview with Penny about the Ridgewood Winery. Thank you for tuning in. Hello and welcome to our interview part. I'm here with Penny Aguirre from the Ridgewood Winery. Hello, Penny.
Hello, Eric. Nice to be here.
Thank you for coming out. And before we speak about the winery, which will celebrate a 10-year anniversary already next year, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from and how did you become a winery person?
Okay, well, I grew up in Moorhead.
Okay.
And my parents bought land on Big Sugar Bush Lake, you know, when I was in high school. So I've been coming up to that area for a long time. And then I built a house there as well. And so that was just where we spent summers and, you know, just a place I love to be. And I currently live in Minneapolis.
Okay.
And have for a long time. But my profession is that I'm a patent agent, and I specialize in writing plant patents. So people that develop new plants and breed new plants, people from all over the world. And one of my, you know, clients is the University of Minnesota. So I do all of their plant patents, their apples and, you know, Zestar and all of their new apples. And as part of that, I patent their grape varieties. The University of Minnesota developed a grape breeding program that helped launch this whole surge of wineries popping up because they developed cold hardy varieties that could be grown here. They're not the only ones, but the four varieties that they developed became kind of what all the people are, most of the grapes that people are planting here. And so as part of my job, I go out to the research center for the university and take botanical data on the grapes and help write the patent. And I tasted the wine and it's like, oh, this is pretty good wine. And so that's kind of how it started. And my cousin kind of, you know, angst me going, you know, there's no winery up here. I think we should start a winery. You know, I'm like, okay. And so it didn't end up that way. I, you know, had a partner at a different partner, Mike Bullock, and him and I found it, and we were just trying to look for land or where would be a good place and a good place to plant a vineyard. And one day we just popped on this place by Buffalo Lake. It's 7 miles from my cabin, right, you know, on the lake, this beautiful spot. It had a big hangar for supplies. It had a garage that we make wine in, and it had a house that we converted into a tasting room. And so we just started planting vines and started the winery.
Yeah, you say that so easily. Like, I'm sitting here with my mouth open, I think. So you are a patent writer. Are you a patent attorney?
No, I'm an agent. So it's the same thing. I prosecute plant patents or any kind of patent, but I only know plants, so I couldn't write an electrical patent because I don't know anything about,
okay,
you know,
fascinating,
electronics. So, but it is, you take the patent bar exam, and they kind of developed it to say that if there was a lack of patent attorneys for all the inventions and all the companies and all the patents, and so they allow people with, you know, bachelor's degrees, particularly in certain areas of science, to take the patent bar exam. The same as attorneys. So attorneys take the exam, you know, like me that qualify can take the exam. And so I'm a patent agent, not an attorney, mm-hmm. but I do everything prosecuting plant patents as an attorney would do, as far as that is.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Different story, but it just fascinated me. And then, you have been in touch with seeds and plants and grapes and then you're...
I'm a horticulturist, basically, yeah.
Yeah. So, so you started working on your business plan, I assume, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, with your cousin, you said?
No, he was a boyfriend at the time.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
And,
my cousin, she was the one who put this bug in my ear, but then, you know, then she got, nah, it sounds like too much work, so good luck with that. she's just the one who got the brainstorm going, I guess.
So, and she didn't want to get dirty.
And she's involved with the winery, but she helps us there, yeah.
But you said you were looking and you had a cabin by Buffalo Lake area, mm-hmm. and you were filming with Little Sugar Bush, so you knew the whole area there?
Yeah, it's an area I'm very familiar with, yeah.
How much of land do one need? How much land did you buy to build your winery?
It's on 9 acres, but I only have 1 acre of grapes. The grapes do really struggle here. It's not that easy. We had a polar vortex that affected all of Minnesota, where the vines, you know, would die back to the ground. Fortunately, they're on their own roots, so you can grow them back up again and whatnot. And they're actually like finally kind of recovering. But 1 acre of grapes is not enough to sustain a winery. So I buy grapes. I buy grapes from farmers.
Okay.
As close as I can get here or whatnot. There's a lot of, you know, that's their specialty. It's hard to have a winery, which is a retail business. We're actually a full bar and make the wine and do the vineyard. Those are all like different businesses. So you have to leave, you know, I leave that more to the experts and buy in grapes to make wine to add to the grapes that I have.
Ah, so you make a cuvée or like a blend of some of your own grapes?
Well, it's the same varieties.
Ah,
so,
okay.
You know, it's the same varieties of grapes. You just, you know, buy the additional grapes because it's not enough to 1 acre. And it is really a lot of work. They're really vigorous. You know, I'm like racing the clock to get it pruned and expose the fruit and put nets on right now before I take a little break. And and so it's a lot of work to keep up. It's probably, I have a, you know, it's kind of a good fit for something for me to do, because I have a bachelor's degree in microbiology, which of course is kind of useful for, you know, working, having done a lot of research in biochemistry. It's nice to know that science to make wine. And I have a master's degree in horticulture. So, you know, that helps with the vineyard. You can understand growing plants. And so that's, I don't know, I can't remember. I just heard from the question, I believe.
Yeah, no, I'm listening, and I think we all are. But so we have 1 acre of plant. Then we have a full bar. You said the tasting room.
Tasting room, yeah. We have a liquor license. So, you know, the actual, like, hard liquor is minimal. But we do offer beer in addition to the wine, so that whatever people like to drink, they can. You know, we don't serve hard liquor or beer on Sunday.
Okay.
Because we don't, you know, have food or whatever. That's our license. But
it's mainly to get educated on wines. You can have little tastings
and get
the. And then you have a winery, and you produce wine.
Yes.
And how many people, like, there's a lot of questions. I don't even know where to begin. You said that you have the grapes from your own vineyard, and then you buy additional ones. Which grape? What is it? A Riesling or a Chardonnay?
No, the three primary grapes that the university developed are Frontenac and Marquette, Le Crescent, and Frontenac Gris. And I'm particularly, the Marquette grape is one, you know, in my opinion, like really the best to make a dry red wine with. A lot of, in history of going to wineries, a lot of them are sweet because our grapes here are very acidic, and so you need to make a balanced wine. They tend to make a lot of sweeter wines, and it's just phenomenal, the level of winemaking and how it's changed since even I began tasting the wine that all the wineries make, and just the grapes are maturing, the grapes are better, so the Minnesota wines just get better. So I particularly use Marquette. And Frontenac is a very acidic one, but I tend to make a rosé out of it. And Le Crescent's difficult to grow, but it's really a beautiful, really great tasting wine. And the newest one that we patented,
oh, really?
Because I patented or helped patent for the university, is called Itasca, which is great for this area,
yeah.
You know, but it's going to make a nice dry white. And it's just being planted around the state, and I'm going to put some vines in next year. And it's much more cold hardy, so that's really exciting development in the grapes. And I do buy grapes from California.
Oh, wait a second, we have an Itasca. We have a Minnesota grape now, so to say. I have never heard of the Itasca grape, obviously.
Yeah, it's brand new. You know, people are planting it in their vineyards. And yeah, it's like the patent even hasn't even gone through yet. It's still pending, so it's their newest grape. So, yeah. So Minnesota has basically four grapes that came out of the University of Minnesota. There's some from, you know, a few from breeders before that or whatnot that are out there as well. So there's been quite a few grapes developed in Minnesota.
So. I was not even prepared for thinking about that, I must admit. So how do you make a new grape? It's just cross. It's like I learned in biology. Yep. You just cross, like you make apples.
Breeding, and you say, you know, like the Marquette grape is 1/4 Pinot Noir. So, of course, you know, to add that little vinifera in it to cut the grapes. And it started way back where they were collecting samples from wild grapes. Because how are you going to get them when they're cold hardy in Minnesota if you don't start with grapes and strains and things that are cold hardy? And so then they try to get other characteristics from other grapes in there, and they've been making crosses for many, many years.
Huh. And cold hardy means they survive and they reproduce every year, so they survive our
winters.
Mm-hmm. And we have wild original.
Yes, there's wild grapes all over the area here. You should try wild grape jelly if you can get your hands on it. It's excellent.
I sound really stupid. I did not know about the wild grapes. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I know, I don't know what's all blueberries or you see strawberries, but I didn't know that we have grapes. Okay. And I'm still fascinated about this Itasca grape.
Very excited, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like white wine.
And I there's no grapes to make wine from yet. I'm probably on the bottom of the list to try to get grapes from people. So I'd love to get some grapes, but they take about 3 years. Itasca's proving to be a good one for getting grapes early, like a crop in 3 years. Generally, the third year you get a light crop, and on year four you get full production from a grapevine. So the fact that they're new and the vines are very young that are planted around the state, there's not going to be a lot of liquorescence in the liquor store, Itasca, very soon.
Okay. And how, like your operation now, how many liters or how many bottles of your wine?
It's a very, very small, you know, probably, you know, it's ranged like 5,000-6,000 bottles a year, sometimes less, you know, it's a very small winery.
Well, yeah, you also have to sell those, 5,000-6,000 bottles sounds a lot to me.
Yeah, I mean, we do very little in wholesale. Most of the wine is sold right at the winery.
Okay.
So I don't run out of wine. So yeah.
And what's the process like? So you have like what's the? How long does it take? Is it you get obviously the growing season? You harvest the grapes and then you stomp them and you make liquids out of them, I suppose. And how long is it stored or? You know, the alcohol has to be produced. What is a production?
Just to give you an idea, that the wine that I'm just having bottled now, mm-hmm. I actually ship it to a winery to get bottled because I don't have bottling equipment. I used to have a mobile truck come, but because my volumes are so small, he doesn't want to come anymore. So the press is so soon, in the middle of September, until like the middle of October, if you get some grapes from California, because they would come a little later, that's when you get the grapes in. And right now, I mean, if I really wanted to push it, I could have had wine maybe done in April or May, but this is very typical for me to have the new wines come out at this time. So basically it took since last September until now to have the wine ready to be bottled.
Okay.
So it's quite a process, and then you're here. You are. You get this 2 month break, and you're right back at it.
Yeah.
And more grapes come, and yeah. So, you know, basically, if you say you make white wine, red wine, and a rosé, the red wines are fermented on the skins, with the berries themselves. So you destem them. And then you start the yeast right with the berries, the crushed berries, right in the tank. If you're making a white wine, you destem them or and you press out the juice right away, and then you take the juice and you ferment it. You don't ferment the berries.
Uh-huh.
And a rosé is just a red wine that you treat like a white wine, and you crush it and press it, you know, press the juice out and ferment the juice.
Okay.
And after that, you know, in a couple of weeks, the fermentation, red wines, you typically have a secondary fermentation that you do. There's some fining agents to pull out some proteins. There's a few things that you do. And then the wine is cold stabilized. So a lot of places, big wineries everywhere, will have cooling jackets where they chill the wine down. And of course, living here, we just open a window. You know, to get it 20 degrees. I mean, even when it's zero or whatever, you know, I go like a month and a half where it's just cold stabilized. And there's adjustments to be made. You check the acid levels. You may have to add some acid or just do some things, you know, working with other winemakers and tasting it. There's some treatments you can do, but I try to keep it real simple, not like chemically change the wine or whatnot. It's better for me to blend it at the end if one wine needs something and another wine could be blended to make a balanced wine. So I'm not, you know, this expert in aromatics and wine and all of that, but I am a good scientist, so I know how to chemically make a balanced wine that's pleasing and stable. And
no, I'm glad to hear. I think I'm from Germany, and the European winemaking, by European law, is very different, I believe, than the U.S., for example. We cannot just put wood chips in and get the taste of a...
Has to be in a wood barrel.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different... And as you know, the French winemaking are extremely proud, but German winemaking is coming back as well. The Riesling, the Grauburgunder. Grauburgunder. Grey Burgundy, Grauburgunder it's kind of like a Chardonnay, I think, but like the Grauburgunder was really not famous at all, but for the past 5 years.
It's making a resurgent. Yep. I love dry Rieslings.
Yeah.
And of course, you didn't even know about them for such a long time because most of the wine that came over here from Germany was sweet Rieslings for so long. And then the first time I tasted a dry Riesling, I'm like, wow, what are they doing? This is fabulous.
And yeah, yeah. No, we have a little... grape renaissance too, I heard. And anyhow, I know that we have different procedures in the United States at times when it comes to flavor. Same with the beer, but we're not going to go into the beer, the purity laws of German beer. But so you do it really balanced. There's not additives unnecessarily.
No. You're very, you know, be careful about that so that you don't mess with the wine too much, because it's amazing how it's hard to taste a young wine that's in the tank and realize what it's going to be like at the end.
Okay.
And it's kind of a learning process, and the most important thing is that it doesn't get oxidized and that, you know, you retain the fruit, and it's, you know, that you just use really good practices and clean practices, and so that it doesn't get contaminated or oxidized by air. And so that's probably one of the most important things. And then you just let the fruit dictate what that wine's going to taste like. So
every year is different, a little bit, possibly.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah,
you can.
Good year, bad year.
Yeah, and strong. I try to be real consistent with wines that the customers have come to like. You know, that we have many, many repeat customers. It's kind of a real community place. There's not really anything in that area where people can go and hang out, like a restaurant or a bar or anything really. And so it's really fun. I mean, that's, I think, one of the funnest thing about the place is that there's people on all these different lakes that never knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's all these friendships that have developed because they meet at the winery and they have their baby showers there and, you know, the bachelorette parties there, and we're having weddings there, and so anniversary parties there. And so it's just kind of become a place for that. And that's
tell
really
us,
fun.
Yeah,
and
tell
I've
us.
Met a lot of fabulous people. I was the same way. You go to your lake cabin, you spend time with your family, and you're on your lake, and you just never go anywhere. And now I have all kinds of friends in the area, and that's really fun.
it's a destination. It became a destination. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I learned that too. I'm here only for 3 years, and sometimes it seems like everything is so quiet and deserted because everybody's just at the cabin, you know, because that's why we're here for. And they look at the lake, swim in the lake, and enjoy the lake, of course. But yeah, you created a destination 10 years ago. And tell us a little bit more about the tasting room. I've been there once, to be honest. Yeah, I've been
there once. Oh, good. Nice.
Checked it out. But I know you have a little bar, and I know that you have those seating, was windows, I guess overlooking
the vineyard. Yep, that's right on the edge of the lake. So
you have program regularly. I always mention here in this podcast your Saturday, you have a music pretty much every weekend.
Yes, we have music every weekend from 4 to 6. And, you know, this year we've added some new people too. Then, and even the musicians that come back are getting better and better and getting to love the winery. So in the summer months from June to the end of September, we have music every Saturday.
Is it well attended?
It can be. It depends on. Sometimes if it's 95 degrees out and everybody doesn't want to get out of their boat.
Yeah.
That's our biggest competition, I think. Saturday, last weekend on Saturday, it just rained a little bit and there wasn't a seat empty in the whole place.
Of course.
So it can be spotty.
Sure.
And it's kind of unique that, you know, we have a bar that you can sit at and do your tastings or whatnot, and we have tables that you sit on. And a lot of small wineries really don't have that. They usually have a tasting bar. I'm sure you've seen that in Germany or California, mm-hmm. where you walk up, taste the wine, you don't sit down and hang out.
No.
And or the same as being at a table that you're waited on. Mm-hmm. That's usually at wineries, you buy a bottle, go sit outside or find a table or whatnot. But we, you know, we like to get to know our customers. And unless it's a crazy big festival or something, we, you know, tend to, you can just come in there. We have pizza, cheese, and sausage, and crackers, and some snacks like that.
Okay. Yeah. So you can spend a little dinner there, a little snacking.
Yeah.
So tell us, there's an event coming up here now, the Stomp. The winery stomp?
Grape stomp. I can't remember if this is our fourth or fifth. I don't know. Does the flyer even say? It's kind of a blur, but it's
not.
It is super fun. It is a super fun event. Basically, it starts at 1 and goes to 7. We have music all day. We have 3 different people coming to play and we're excited about that. But the entrance, the gates open at 1. Entrance is $10 a person. Under 21 is free. And you get a commemorative wine glass. And if you want to stomp, there's no pre-sign up. It's an additional $10 per person.
Okay.
And we have like 5 rounds, so maybe 25 stompers, and it's a competition.
Oh.
Yes, and you can wear costumes. There's an award for the best costume. So okay. that's always been fun to see what people come dressed up in. You don't have to. And so I think the stomp maybe starts 3:34, but people come early and get signed up so that, you know, you're kind of ready to go. And basically you get in the barrel with your partner, and we have no railing. You got to hold on to each other or figure it out. And it's a competition on how much juice that comes out of the barrel when you're stomping. And that's who wins, whoever got the most juice. It's, everybody gets the same 15 pounds of grapes in each barrel, so it's all the same. So
It's fun.
It's real fun. We have games out there, just yard games and things like that, but it's super fun. And we also have an event the night before.
Okay.
We've done this the same, it must be maybe 3-4 years, but we host a benefit for the Tamarack Wildlife Refuge. It's actually the Friends of Tamarack.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they let people know how special they are and what they really do. Because they've developed all these educational programs. They have a big interpretive center. I don't know, when I was a kid, you could go on a field trip, get on a bus, they'd bring you somewhere, do something cool. And that doesn't really happen much anymore in budgets. They don't do that. So pay for children to come out there and learn about nature. And
yeah, they have a center there.
Yeah.
I've been there with my son and my family. Yeah. It's they have movie program. I mean, movie, but they have a program every Sunday, I think. And it's a really interesting. I don't know enough about it.
And so they have a silent auction. I think tickets. Oh, I should be more prepared for this. Where you can get tickets in advance, but you can go to just our website. There'd be a link. Or look up Friends of Tamarack, or it's called the Toast of Tamarack.
So that event is a fundraiser to support their mission and the programs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's September 8th?
Yes, it's the night before.
And September 9th
it's
would
the
be
grave the stomp.
So you have a full September ahead.
It's a fun weekend, yes. And there's a jazz band, and so it's pretty fun.
Yeah, really cool. Well, I think we learned a lot. We have hardy grapes now. We have how many wineries in Minnesota?
I think it might be up to 60. I think when I started, it might have been low 22, something like that. And
really?
I think it's close to 60 now. They're still popping up.
So do you meet once a year, or are you an association? Do you know?
Yes,
we
have a farm winery association, and that's just some of our winery members belong to. But the main thing is the Minnesota Grape Growers, and so that's the winery people, the grape growers, and there's all kinds of educational programs on making wine, growing grapes, and that's a full weekend in Minnesota in the winter. This year it's in March. We usually have it during Super Bowl, but of course you can't have anything. Anybody can have anything this year then. And so, yes, it's just, and then we have a big wine tasting open to the public. So all the wineries have this, I think on the Friday night of this event, it's open to the public and you can come there and there you have it. There's 40 wineries and they all have 8 wines and you paid admission and you can taste all the wines.
Where would that be, in Minneapolis, St. Paul?
In Minneapolis, yeah.
Okay.
Downtown Minneapolis, I believe, in the middle of March.
March?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Fun.
Yeah. So that's our main get-together. You know, we often have a picnic, but that's where we mostly interact, that once a year for a weekend.
And you share experience, so the 60 wine growers are...
Yeah, everybody's there. All the people that grow them, all the people that make the wine, and
are they? I mean, you mentioned earlier it's tough to survive on. I suppose, is it profitable?
Not really.
So you do it as a passion, or most wine they just do it for a passion.
You know, I have a lot of other things going. You know, my other business is really busy, and there's not, right now it's pretty much women ran. I have a fabulous tasting room manager, and on that point, we are looking for people that want to work in the tasting room.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So if anybody
as waiters or
yep, okay. Just to provide the tastings, and it's you know it we're looking with somebody with a good personality that's outgoing and likes to talk to people and preferably. Enjoys wine.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a plus. And doesn't, you know, mind doing sales, but it's pretty much, it's fun. And,
how many
and the tips aren't bad on some days.
How many people work in your operation? Just a few?
Just a few.
Just a few, okay. It's a small operation, yeah, I suppose.
We're down to 3 people right now, mostly. Tasting room manager and me, and then of course I get whatever I can find to get people to help in the vineyard and you know or to make wine, but anybody's interested in any of those experiences
they should. How do people reach you? Richwoodwinery.com, or
yes,
that's your webpage, and you can find all the details on about the winery and get in touch with you.
Yep.
In case somebody wants to support or help or work.
Yeah, there are phone numbers there, or you can send an online message.
And your schedule is also on it? I mean,
The schedule, the events, the music, pretty much everything that's going on, yeah.
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 Well, one more question I had. You said the wine that just arrived now, grown 2016, that would be a 2016 wine, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
The vintage is the year that the grapes were harvested.
Ah, okay. And then the process is usually a year to... Before it's, and then are your wines prepared to be aged? Because I know that like Beaujolais, for example...
Not
like
particularly, yeah. So they're not really made in a style to age it. It's turning out that Marquette has been aging really well. And of course, sweet wines don't age well. They're really meant to be drank, consumed. But we don't make them in a style that, you know, they bottle stored for 3 years. We can't. We need to sell the wine. I don't have enough wine to do that. It's not that the dry reds will age, but they're not really intended to go in the cellar for 20 years or anything like that. But we don't know. I mean, I have some 2009 and 2010, and there's not many left because you can't help yourself, you know. And it's good. You know, I only have like two bottles, so I guess that 20-year test is never going to happen. But yeah.
Okay. Well, anything else you want to share?
I just hope that, you know, people come out and just check it out. And it's a great place to have events, you know, whether it's just corporate little get-together or showers.
Or you can rent?
Yes, and it's very reasonable, and we let people bring in their own food to have a shower, or it can be catered from outside people. And we've had a few weddings
Do you give tours through the winery?
Give tours, but it's not, this is not really a big time of year. I mean, if it's kind of impromptu if I'm there, especially me, I know something. I certainly go and do the vines. I don't have any scheduled tours, and of course, all the wine is out of the wine lab now, so there's really, there's our equipment. It's very... it's not a whole lot to see, but yeah.
But for a corporate event, someone could come and incorporate like a celebration of some sort with like an educational component. You could go through and see.
Yeah,
like,
if you want, yeah.
Just a little bit. I mean, maybe a lot of people from the area
don't really make wine. You know, yeah.
So they drink it, but like, how has it been produced? That's really interesting. That's something that.
So even though the wine's not there, you know, at this time, or it's fairly boring in the final stages where it's just being filtered or something, there's not much to see, but at least you can kind of explain the process.
Well, thank you very much. Good luck on the grape stomp and the next 10 years. I suggest you keep the more and more in reserve to make the 20-year age test.
I've got a wine cellar at my cabin and I try to just put it in there and shut the door.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming out.
Thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
See you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, this was already our newest episode of the Lake Life Weekend podcast. We sure hope you enjoyed it. Tune in again next week with another great guest and updates. Always check out our website, lakelifeweekend.com. And if you have some comments, please feel free to email us at hello@lakelifeweekend.com, and you have a wonderful weekend ahead.